Good morning. Todd Zwillick is in for John Hockenberry, who is away today. Good morning, Todd.
Hi, good morning. Adora, Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez is a vocal and bombastic critic of the United States.
That's a good way to put it.
That's true. At the same time, the nationalized oil business that keeps his country afloat sells billions of dollars of oil to the U.S. and other nations, the ones he says he despises. Now, many big oil companies don't bother drilling in Venezuela anymore. It's just too complicated. Now, of course, gas prices have plunged, and Chavez is gently cozying up to companies like Chevron and Shell to see if they'd like to return to Venezuela and look for oil. He needs the money. Well, Simone Romero is in Caracas. He's covering this story for our partner, the New York Times, and he's joining us right now. Good morning, Simone.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks.
Thanks. Simone, Venezuela's finances must really be bad for Hugo Chavez to be courting businesses with the agents of capitalism, right?
Well, the situation is definitely a lot different than it was just 6 months ago. Venezuela's government says that it does have a substantial cushion of foreign currency reserves and hard currency socked away in other funds, but with oil falling more than 70% from its peak last July, the country is facing a very different funding scenario this year than it did last year, so it is making some changes to its energy policies, yes.
Well, what's at stake for Chavez? I mean, how much of his economy, how much of his aggressive health care and education programs rely on oil income?
Well, at stake for Chavez really is economic stability and the sustainability for his own government. He has proposed a referendum, which is expected to take place next month, that would allow him to run for re-election indefinitely. And really, the underpinning for his entire political project is oil revenues. Venezuela relies on oil for more than 90% of its export revenues, and that's up from about 70% at the time that Chavez took office in the late 1990s. So he really does know what they've been doing in this case.
Well, you write in your story this morning that Western oil companies, and these are my words, have kind of been there and done that with Chavez. They've worked in the country before and they've left because their contracts don't get honored. A lot of them have already left because they can't rely on Chavez's government to follow through. Why would they consider coming back to him now?
Well, that's a great question. And yes, some of the largest companies have left, like Exxon and ConocoPhillips. They left in a dispute over the nationalization of oil projects back in 2007. But then again, Venezuela also differs substantially from top oil nations like Saudi Arabia or Mexico in that in those countries, the national oil companies have a monopoly in oil production and oil exploration, whereas in Venezuela, there's actually been more flexibility on the part of Chavez and other top officials in the government in allowing private companies to remain as minority partners. They never completely closed that door. And for a lot of companies, whether they're companies like Chevron in the United States, Shell or BP in Europe, they really look at Venezuela's oil reserves, and it's an opportunity that they still can't pass up.
Simone, how's Chavez's popularity at home right now? And I ask it wondering, if he doesn't get extra oil revenue with gas prices so low, does he really risk losing a grip on power, or is it not quite that tenuous? Where is he at?
Well, that really is open to question. He's about to find out next month with this vote on amending the Constitution so he can run again as many times as he wants. Chavez, after being in power for a decade, really does have some resilience, actually, as a leader. His popularity ratings, according to polls here, are all over the place, whether they're, close to 50%, close to 60%. He still has maintained a fairly solid grip on power and on popular support in the country. And that's largely due to the way that he's redirected oil revenues in recent years. He's created an array of social welfare programs, from putting, health clinic staff with Cuban doctors into slums to creating adult education projects, to building new universities, and all of those different things have actually helped him to maintain a degree of popular support.
But Simone, let me ask you this, though. He's been able to hold on because times have been flush, oil prices have been high. Does his leadership, is it jeopardized at all with the plunging price of oil?
Well, history might offer up a lesson here in Venezuela. We've had previous regimes here, previous governments that some of them democratically elected, some of them not, who carried out similar policies. You know, the last time was with the big oil boom back in the 1970s when, you know, a populist government did some of the same things that Chavez was doing in order to win popular support. And then, you know, lo and behold, oil prices crashed in the 1980s, leading to a severe economic crisis and that ultimately resulted in rioting on the streets and the deaths of hundreds of people in the late 80s. So, and that's ultimately what ushered Chavez to power. He carried out a coup attempt in the aftermath of those events back in 1992 and really sort of, you know, was thrust into the public eye.
Well, Simone, let me ask you.
So, yes.
Well, let me ask you really quickly about the U.S. government. Of course, they'd love to see Chavez collapse, wouldn't they? I mean, doesn't it make sense that they might be pressuring U.S. oil companies to stay out of Venezuela and try to expedite his demise? Is there any evidence that those conversations are taking place?
Boy, that's a wonderful question. I'd love to be a fly in the wall in the executive suites right now of, oil companies in Houston or in the State Department in Washington. It's just really hard to tell. And, of course, there's a transition taking place in Washington next week. With an administration that said it's going to be more open to talking to adversaries, of the United States than the current one. So that'll be really interesting to watch unfold.
Simone Romero with the New York Times. Thanks for joining us from Caracas this morning.
It's my pleasure. Thanks a lot for having me.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.